The Progressive Commentary Hour with Gary Knoll, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Program. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour, where we take on a single theme for the entire program, inviting one or more individuals to share their unique insights. Time permitting, I will set maybe 5 or 10 minutes at the end of the program for your calls. The theme today, dangers of radio frequency radiation from electromagnetic fields or EMFs, technologies, smart meters. The question is, health and environmental risks and violations of civil liberties. Joining me in this discussion will be Dr. David Carpenter. He is a medical doctor trained at Harvard, now serving as the director of the Institute for Health and Environmental Issues at the University of Albany School of Public Health. In the past, he has served as director of the Wadsworth Laboratory of the New York State Department of Health, an agency he worked at for 18 years, and was recently appointed to New York's Renewable Energy Task Force to implement plans to reduce electricity use through new energy efficiency programs. Dr. Carpenter has been a leading voice warning about the dangers of radio frequency radiation association from electromagnetic field technologies, and the author of a very comprehensive bioinitiative report about the health hazards of EMFs. He has published over 220 peer review papers, and he is at bioinitiative.org/report/index.htm. Joining him will be Joshua Hart. Joshua Hart is the director of Stop Smart Meters, an advocacy media organization fighting against the forced deployment and installation of wireless utility meters that harm health, violate civil liberties, and endanger public safety. Joshua has an advanced degree in transportation planning from the University of West England and was working extensively in energy industries as an urban planner and environmental activist. His research and journalism have been covered in many media outlets, including the BBC, The Guardian, The Daily Mail in the UK, and Survivor Magazine and Carbusters. His website is stopsmartmeters.org. Welcome, Dr. Carpenter, and welcome, Joshua Hart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for having us on.
Joshua, we're going to begin with you. And on this program, unlike other radio programs you may have done, ours is one that explores an issue definitively. We don't ask for nor encourage short answers. We want as long as it takes for you to express and explain, so we have a story, a context, so we really have an understanding of what the issue is. So I'm asking both of you, take your time. This is a non-commercial program, and therefore I won't be limiting you. Also, I will not be interjecting myself every other second. I give more time for people to talk uninterrupted than any other radio program in the United States. That said, let's begin. Joshua, most people do not know what a smart meter is. In fact, in preparation for today's program, we went out onto the street where our office is in New York City, in a very highly educated area, and we asked people, what are smart meters? What are they used for? Where are they at? 95% of people didn't know what a smart meter was or have any idea how it would be used. So take us step by step through, what are smart meters? Do we need smart meters? Do they advance our life and quality of life in some way that justifies them being there? Is there any downside to them? So at least we lay out the larger picture. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, thanks, Gary. You know, I think that this gap in public awareness about smart meters is, you know, a result of the mass media not properly doing their job at informing people. And what we're talking about here are generally wireless, but also some of them use a broadband over power line. These are new electronic utility meters used for electricity, gas, and sometimes water. And they're being deployed throughout the United States using taxpayer and ratepayer funds to do so. They began being deployed as part of the so-called smart grid about a couple of years ago, and the Pacific Gas and Electric here in Northern California was one of the first utilities to deploy them. Now, this is a brand new form of meter, and the meter, as some people have put it, is sort of the ring in the relationship between the utility and the customer. And what these meters do is basically analyze every element of your in-home energy usage, from what appliances you use. On a second by second, even millisecond by millisecond basis, and relay that information on a generally real-time basis to the utility. Now you might say, oh, well, it doesn't matter, if my utility has information about when I make a cup of tea, but it goes much deeper than that. There's a tremendous amount that can be gleaned about the activity that goes on in your home from your electricity usage, what time you go to bed and what time you wake up in the morning, when you're away on vacation, how many people are in the home, presence or absence in the home. And the utilities have this sort of dream that they've sort of dreamed up in a vacuum without any consultation, without any sort of notification in many cases. They have this dream of these home area networks that will wirelessly pulse information from your various appliances back to the meter and then onto the utility. So this is really alarming to civil liberties activists who are very, very concerned about the prospects for this data not only falling into the wrong hands and unauthorized hands through interception of the wireless technology, but also through authorized uses of your private data by government agencies or third-party corporations. So, for example, your refrigerator could detect the radio frequency tags on the packaged foods that you bought and relay what you're eating essentially back to the utility, and then they could sell it to your health insurance company. Your health insurance company could decide, we don't want to insure someone who's, eating a bunch of chocolate or ice cream at 3 in the morning because that kind of behavior is associated with negative health outcomes. There's already been cases where people have been taken into court, arrested based on information that was gleaned from the smart meter. People growing marijuana, for example, or running an unauthorized business out of their home. This has already been, this has already happened. So the privacy issue is huge, and that's a major one. When we first started fighting these smart meters here in Santa Cruz County in California about 18 months ago, our main concern was the wireless technology. And I had always assumed, like most people in our society, that wireless is safe, that cell phones have been tested for safety by the government, and we shouldn't have to worry about it. And, the rollout of smart meters has prompted a lot of people to look more deeply into the science, to question the dominant ideology that these technologies are safe. And back 18 months ago when we, first started going around to local governments and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is there's something wrong here with, basically what we're talking about is pulsed microwave radiation being emitted by these meters in very short but sharp bursts that are more intense and more powerful than typical consumer wireless technology we already have around our home. So it was all theoretical 18 months ago. We were concerned about the prospect of future health damage. Over the last 18 months, I hate to say it, and it's been a real crime that's been taking place in our view. But many of those health impacts have come to pass, and we have been flooded with people reporting everything from headaches, insomnia, dizziness, skin issues, ringing in the ears is a very common one. But there have been more than 10,000 written complaints submitted to the California Public Utilities Commission since these meters were installed. And the number just keeps increasing. So it's very clear that we're facing a public health catastrophe from the installation of these meters. It's very clear that the utilities installed these meters without a proper pilot testing. You know, it's clear that they had a tremendous amount to gain from the installation, more profitability. And we're talking about billions and billions of our, you know, ratepayer and taxpayer dollars here that could have gone to things like, you know, insulation or renewable energy projects, things that we desperately need. But instead, you know, they're going to line the pockets of these corporations. So, And then, you know, not to mention, there's been a lot of fires reported, explosions from these meters. They are not Underwriters Laboratory certified. UL certification is required for all consumer electronics, consumer appliances, and yet these meters are not UL certified. We've had reports of injuries and even deaths associated with these fires. And you know, one of the main justifications for this program has been the utilities are saying that the meters will help them reduce carbon emissions, and yet there's no independent evidence that they're doing so. In fact, the evidence is that these meters, because they consume electricity, unlike the older analog style meters, are actually generating more carbon emissions and consuming more power. So across the board, the smart meter program and the smart grid to date has been a disaster for public health, for the environment, for safety and privacy. And as a result, you know, we have this broad coalition, grassroots coalition of people, everyone from the Tea Party to Occupy groups to the Green parties, really mobilizing to fight these things in public utilities commissions and in legislative houses across the country. We have more than 40 groups who are organized in every, you know, every state in the country practically. And it's united, you know, previously disparate parts of the political spectrum to come together and say, this is not right. You know, this is something that has happened really under the radar. It's something that is not only, you know, forcing people out of their homes. When you talk about the people who are the most electrosensitive, we have a number of cases where people have contacted us, you know, people who just are normal, or everyday people who had no idea about the wireless health risks, suddenly finding their homes uninhabitable and having to live in their home, in their cars, excuse me, or in the forest, or just, you know, go on the run. So we are continuing to fight this. We're continuing to investigate how this came to be, and the smart meter rollout has really become a symbol of what's really wrong with our government and our system of government and the way that it interacts with these corporate entities.
I appreciate your overview. We'll come back to you in a little bit to ask more specific questions about what is the range of electromagnetic pollution from the device, how far away is it before you can be safe, and what happens if your bedroom is on the other side of where one of these meters are placed. I also will be asking you about the police coming in some instances to ensure that there was no resistance from the individuals who did not want these on their homes. I'll be asking you about who benefits from all this and why is it that this was all done so quietly. A lot more to talk about, but I appreciate your opening statement. Now, Dr. Carpenter, we all know that for more than 100 years, cigarette smoking was said to be not only beneficial. I have full-page ads in the Journal of the American Medical Association from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s talking about lucky strikes. 48,000 physicians recommend them because it soothes women's throat and calms their nerves. No lawsuit was ever won by any citizen who sued a cigarette maker because the maker would always get a group of scientists to come into court and say, you cannot prove that having smoked one or two or three packs a day caused your emphysema or your lung cancer or any other condition. And it was not until the whistleblower released information that showed that all seven of the major cigarette manufacturers had lied under oath to Congress when they said that they had no knowledge of any actual addictive part of smoking. It turns out the FDA had known of the addictive qualities of cigarettes for decades, but was forced to protect the patent privacy rights of the manufacturers, and hence withheld this information from the public. Only based upon them having lied to Congress were they brought back before Congress, had to acknowledge with a mea culpa, yes, we lied, and then they paid enormous sums of money to the states to reimburse for Medicaid, and then it was all washed clean. They didn't go out of business. In fact, some of their stocks actually improved because this pesky litigation was behind them. But what also was behind them are millions upon millions of individuals who had been sickened or died over those decades when the bulk of American medicine believed that smoking was okay, science did not challenge it, and not because of science or medicine was it finally overturned. It had to do with whistleblowing. Now, that said, only as a precedent, we now see synthetic hormone replacement therapy increasing heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, dementia, and colorectal cancer. Still 10 million American women are using it, and it still has not been given the type of critical condemnation that it deserves. Why in the world, then, would the average person fear something like a meter onto their home when the utility company is putting it in, the oversight governmental agencies, and the legislators or those here on hearings of legislative committees have all given this a clean bill of health? We were told repeatedly there is no proof of harm. This is all exaggeration. People like yourself and others are merely scaremongers. And now you have a chance to share what the actual science shows, and do you have smoking guns, as was the case with cigarette and other things that were foisted upon the public that should never have been, based upon good science and good medicine, should never have been implemented, and take us detail by detail about, were there studies done to prove it was safe, and if not, why not? That would be the best argument of all. And are there any studies that are not industry-funded that can prove these are safe? And are there independent studies showing they're not? So take us full forward on each of these, please.
Well, it was good that you introduced the subject by talking about cigarette smoking, because the blame there goes even beyond the industry and goes to the health professions. There's a wonderful book by Deborah Davis called The Secret War on Cancer. And in that book, Deborah details how in the late 30s, German scientists demonstrated the hazards of cigarette smoke. In the U.S., most of the lead people in the National Cancer Institute, American Cancer Society, other American Medical Association, number one, they all smoked. They were addicted. Number two, the research was done by bad Nazis and therefore could be ignored. And in the U.S., we had no warning of the hazards of cigarette smoke until the Surgeon General's report. And then, of course, the industry tried to defend themselves. But I do see very similar analogies here with the whole general area of electromagnetic field health effects. Now, let me say right up front, in terms of smart meters specifically, there have not been any credible scientific studies of smart meters. The concern is that the radio frequency radiation from smart meters is exactly the same that comes from your microwave oven, from your cell phone, from the wireless things that you have in your house. And we do have a very significant body of information about health hazards from exposure to radio frequency radiation. Now, just as a bit of background, my initial involvement in the whole EMF issue, electromagnetic fields, came in the 1980s when I first came to New York and was given responsibility for administering a research program about power lines. And at the time that we began that program, I was very skeptical that there was anything wrong with electricity. However, there had been a publication in the late 1970s showing that children that lived in homes that were very near to power lines that carried a lot of current were more likely to develop leukemia. We confirmed that study in a totally independent study also conducted in the city of Denver. And since that time, there have been numerous other studies that have found a small but significant elevation in the risk of leukemia in children that live in homes that have high-voltage power lines or neighborhood power lines that carry high current and therefore have elevated magnetic fields. Furthermore, when you look in adults, and especially in adults that work in occupations where there's high exposure to magnetic fields, elevation in adult leukemia. And in the only study that I'm aware of that's been done where one looked at adults and looked at both their exposure to magnetic fields at home and their exposure in the office or wherever their job was, demonstrated that the risk added, which is what one expects, and this is what we expect from almost any dangerous environmental exposure, more is worse. And what's important is the intensity of the exposure and the duration at which you're exposed. And that leads to various diseases. Now, the big concerns with electromagnetic fields and specifically radio frequency fields from smart meters and other sources is brain cancer and leukemia. There are other concerns, and I'll get to those in a bit, but the relationship between radio frequency field exposure and brain cancer and leukemia is, in my judgment, very, very strong. So strong that I can't understand why our international and national agencies refuse to acknowledge it. The area where we have the strongest evidence is from people that use cell phones and use them for many years and hold them close to their head. This has been making the newspapers and the media to some degree, but the problem is that the evidence is much stronger than the usual reports, because the usual reports sort of quote the industry and saying, well, you know, this isn't proven yet. Well, the studies are consistent in showing that for adults, if you use a cell phone for 10 years or more, you are much more likely than anyone else to develop a brain tumor, but only on the side of your head where you hold the cell phone. And in spite of reports, for example, there was a recent study supported by the World Health Organization, as well as cell phone companies, that in their publication said, well, we didn't find anything, no elevated risk of brain cancer in people that use cell phones as compared to people that did not. And then they had an appendix that showed very clearly that if you used your cell phone for 10 years or more, you had a very significant elevation in risk of developing brain cancer in the side of the head that you held the cell phone regularly. Even more frightening are the studies that have come out of Scandinavia, where investigators have looked at children, and, well, really anybody under the age of 20 when they begin to use a cell phone. And, of course, in our society, what kid that's even 6 years old isn't given a cell phone by his or her parents? And when they're teenagers, they spend most of the day when they're not in school on the cell phone. This study from these studies from Scandinavia have shown that the younger you are, the greater the risk that you will develop brain cancer. For the aggregate of people under the age of 20, the risk is 5 times greater than it is for older adults. And the older you are, the less the risk, but the younger you are, the greater the risk. Now, this is a real concern, because we've had this sudden growth in radio frequency radiation, particularly from cell phones, but smart meters, we'll get to them in a moment. You know, we didn't have cell phones, at least in the U.S., to any great degree until about the last 10 years. Well, it's only these studies from Europe, where cell phones were first invented and where they've been used longer than we have in the U.S., that you're seeing elevations in rates of brain cancer and overall rates in the general population. And then in these studies that are usually case-control studies. So you take people that have brain cancer and you try to match them to a person of the same gender and the same age that doesn't have brain cancer, and then you compare their cell phone usage. Well, it's not very good, because how well could any of us remember how frequently we were on a cell phone 10 years ago? And the latency for development of the disease after the exposure is long. But even in spite of those problems, the studies are consistently showing these elevations in brain tumors. Now, let me talk about leukemia, because leukemia was the major cancer that we saw from the power line magnetic fields. Well, leukemia from power line fields is when the whole body is exposed to magnetic fields. And I should perhaps back up a little bit and talk about electromagnetic fields in general and how they vary with frequency. Everybody knows that in the U.S. we have 60 hertz electricity. That means that there's a 60 cycles per second in the sine wave that constitutes our electricity. First of all, electromagnetic fields are packets of energy like sunlight. They don't have any weight, but they have energy. And that energy is reflected in the magnetic field as a function of the current that flows in a wire. And the frequency, the best example, again, is visible light. Everybody knows that the red colors are longer frequency than the blue and violet. Well, at very high frequencies, we have X-rays and cosmic rays and gamma rays, and those are known to directly damage DNA and cause cancer and birth defects and a host of other things. Below that, we have the ultraviolet, which is very dangerous. This is people out of their mind when they go to tanning saloons to get a tan because they're increasing their risk of cancer. And then below that, we have visible light. And obviously, life on Earth couldn't exist without visible light. So then how can these things be bad? The radio frequency fields that we're talking about, smart meters, microwave ovens, radio and television transmission, that's a lower frequency. And finally, at the tail end, you have the electricity from power lines. Well, our evidence for elevated risks of cancer are probably strongest for these lowest frequencies, also for the very highest frequencies that are called ionizing radiation. But for people exposed to radio frequency radiation, our best evidence of the harm there comes from studies of people that live close to AM, powerful AM radio transmission towers. And those studies have been principally done around people in Rome living around the Vatican radio, and there have been a number of studies from Korea. And what they show is a striking elevation, especially in children but also in adults, in rates of leukemia. Now, there's a slight elevation in rates of brain tumors as well. And this was true also around the power lines. So the evidence as I see it is that if you have exposure to EMFs, whether power line frequency or radio frequency, over your whole body, you're at greater risk of leukemia. If you have it localized to one place, like your brain, as you hold your cell phone to your head, then you're going to get primarily certain kinds of brain cancer. Now, let's back up from that. The amount of radio frequency radiation in our environment has just gone up enormously. And you can't go into a Starbucks or a McDonald's these days without being in a Wi-Fi environment. Well, a Wi-Fi environment has a small amount of radio frequency radiation that you're exposed to continuously. If you can turn on your radio or your television set, that reflects the fact that there's radio frequency waves in your environment. And I'm not saying that they are uniquely dangerous, because we all live in them, and we don't all develop leukemia and brain tumors. But the evidence from the cell phone says that excessive exposure increases the risk of developing brain tumors and leukemia. And our concern, my major concern with regard to smart meters, is not that they are uniquely a source of radiofrequency radiation, because the radiofrequency radiation from a smart meter is the same as comes from your wireless laptop. It's the same that comes from your cell phone. The frequencies may be slightly different, but there's no evidence that the frequency matters greatly in terms of the elevated risk of cancer. Smart meters, especially when they're installed in your house without your permission, or even and often it's without your knowledge, they provide a continuous source of radiofrequency radiation. That radiation does fall off with distance, and we'll hear more about that in a bit. But if the smart meter is outside of your home, and your easy chair in front of the television is just on the other side of the wall, you're going to be continuously exposed as long as you're sitting there, and that can be at a very short distance. So my concern is that the health effects of radiofrequency radiation are real. We have every reason to believe that, like any other environmental exposure, more is worse. Smart meters add to your exposure, and they're going to increase the risk of disease. Now, there are a variety of other diseases that have not been studied nearly as well. One, for example, is reduced sperm count in men. And men that go around having their cell phone on their belt in a continuous on mode, it may be a good way of contraception, but it's not a good thing to do. Having your cell phone in your belt also is going to increase the exposure to other organs in the pelvis. And we worry about elevations in gastrointestinal cancers, prostate cancer, other kinds of abdominal cancers. Again, nobody's really done those studies yet, but there's no reason to think that other kinds of cancers wouldn't be of elevated risk from these exposures. So we've already heard a little bit about electrohypersensitivity. It appears that certain people are more vulnerable. They get these rather nonspecific signs of headaches, so muscle and joint aches, a sense of their brain not working right. That's not as well documented by the scientific community, but there are large numbers of people that ascribe these symptoms to their exposure to electromagnetic fields. There is clear evidence for an increase in the risk of Alzheimer's disease and Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, in people that are excessively exposed to power line fields. It's not been studied as well yet with radio frequency fields. But the point is, these fields are dangerous. They increase the risk of human disease.
I appreciate those overviews. Thank you. Now, let's add something into this mix. How many times have you seen people use Bluetooth phones right in their ear and are working? You see this all the time in an airport, and they're working on a laptop. And even on the plane, once they get above 10,000 feet, they work on a laptop. So with all that involved, and then we're told that none of these studies are confirmative, none are definitive. So it doesn't matter how many studies are by independent scientists, the industry, through its lobbying efforts with ALEC, and the state and federal legislators are able to thwart the efforts of true independent science of showing a risk by saying, but it's not definitive. And they did this with cigarettes. They did this with asbestos. They also did this with some of the silicone breast implants. They've done this with multiple. They did this with dioxin, 245D. Where they just denied that there's enough evidence. My question is, why should the evidence always be 100% needed in order to give us an opportunity to say, no, I don't want to expose myself, or yes, I will expose myself? We're always protecting the industry, never seem to be protecting the public. Your thoughts on this?
Well, there is, in biology and medicine, you never get 100% proof. You can get 100% proof in mathematics. You can prove a theorem so that there's absolutely no doubt but what it's true. But go back to the cigarette smoking and lung cancer. There is not absolute 100% proof there yet. What we have is the weight of the evidence. You have multiple studies done by different investigators in different countries, and they all get the same result. Now, that still doesn't constitute, there's still things we don't know about how cigarette smoking causes lung cancer. In this case, the weight of the evidence says this is a hazard. It says it's a hazard for at least two kinds of cancer that fortunately aren't very common, although the big concern is they may become very common in the future. And, you know, I've been involved in these battles. I'm certainly presently involved in the battle over dioxin. And, you know, one of the major scientists that poo-pooed the argument that dioxin was dangerous turned out to be a consultant to the Monsanto Corporation that was making the dioxin. So, you know, I think what is so important here is that people look objectively at what's published. And I know it's hard for the general public. You don't have access to a lot of the scientific literature. But the weight of the evidence at present says that this is a danger, and that while none of us are going to go back to the pre-wireless age, that's not possible, what is logical is to reduce your exposure. Now let's talk about the Bluetooth. The Bluetooth communicates to the cell phone by radio frequency radiation. But if your cell phone is on your desk or the dash of your car, the Bluetooth will have a lot lower intensity of radio frequency radiation than if you're holding your cell phone to your head. So in that regard, it's good. However, if you have a wired earpiece, there will be no radio frequency radiation to your brain. From a cell phone, the intensity of the radio frequency radiation falls off very rapidly with distance. It's interesting. I've been involved in attempts in the state of Maine to have warnings put on cell phones like they are on cigarette packages that its use is dangerous. And someone pointed out at one of these hearings that if you read the fine print in most cell phones, it says don't hold the cell phone closer to your head than about 1 inch. Who reads that? Who knows? Well, it certainly tells you that the manufacturer knows that there's a danger there. The thing for the public to know is that if you have a wired computer, you have no radio frequency exposure. If you have a wireless computer sitting on your lap, you're exposing your pelvis. And this general tendency for people to think that, well, wireless is convenient, and the government allows it, therefore it must be safe. Well, the government is not impartial on this. They're controlled by industry. In this case, the Federal Communications Commission is, first of all, has no health experts on radio frequency radiation. I and a colleague visited them to try to get them to at least issue some warnings and preferably to change their standards. But they basically washed us off. So one really cannot depend on the government to protect us.
All right. Let's go through a few of the health hazards specific to this. What if a person has a smart meter put on their house or in their apartment? How far should they be before there's no major threat, or how close should they be when they can really expect to have a problem with those pulses?
I'll let my colleague answer that one.
Yeah, I mean, in our experience, you know, of course, getting further away from any source of radio frequency radiation is going to reduce it by the inverse square of the distance. And so, you know, you want to put distance between yourself and the meter. There are cases where more than 100 meters, electric meters, which are constantly pulsing, are installed on the other side of the wall from a child's bedroom. And in the worst case scenario, you have a baby's crib on the same, on the other side of the wall to these pulsing meters. And in that case, you have very high levels of exposure. And there's been a couple of analyses of the risks here. One is done by Cindy Sage, and that report can be downloaded at sagereports.com. There's another analysis done by Daniel Hirsch, who's a nuclear policy expert at the University of California. He looked at cumulative whole-body exposure over the long term, and this is the kind of thing that Dr. Carpenter's talking about that's associated with leukemia levels. And what he found, and he and his team found, were that basically the smart meter, if you're going to measure over the long term, you're basically subjected to between 100 and 150 times the exposure of a cell phone when you're talking about full body cumulative exposure. And you know, this is fundamentally different than other consumer electronic devices that we choose to buy, we choose to use, even if it's not with informed consent about the health risks. We have a choice about it. And in many places where these smart meters are going in, they're going in, as you said, without knowledge or consent or choice, in those areas where there's not an opt out. And and this is, you know, fundamentally, and this is something that the World Health Organization in May classified as a class 2B, you know, possible carcinogen. And this is the first time in history, I think, where the government and the utilities have authorized in many cases, the forced installation of a carcinogen into our homes. And in many cases, people have little to no recourse. So it's a major ethical issue. And you know, these meters are basically always chirping to each other. So they're part of this mesh network. So the meter, you know, will send out a signal to your neighbor's meter, and then they'll send their signal onto another meter, which will go onto what's called a data collector unit antenna, and then onto a Verizon cell tower, and then back to the utility, all wirelessly. And so as a result, you have this sort of blanket of pulsing microwave emissions that, when you measure the peaks of the emissions, are actually very, very strong. In some cases, you know, 10 times the strength of a Wi-Fi router. It's very difficult to make some of these comparisons because it's sort of apples and oranges. But you know, in speaking with the people who've had the health complaints, generally, you know, they're within about 25 to 50 feet. And the worst cases are those where you know, people sleep on the other side of the wall from a meter and find that they can't sleep, or that they have sleep interruptions or very powerful nightmares. But the range of these meters is, you know, up to a mile. So, you know, obviously the signal diminishes very significantly with distance. But if you live in a dense environment, particularly multi-unit housing or apartments, you're at very high risk of exposure. And you know, as Dr. Carpenter outlined, I would say the science is very, very strong at this point. And the only reason why the public don't realize this is complicity between, you know, the mainstream media, which are reporting, oh, it's sort of, you know, there's evidence on both sides. It's an unsettled issue. And this is only possible because the industry is so busy generating these poorly planned studies to show that there's some sort of debate about this. And this whole issue is outlined very well in Deborah Davis's book Disconnect, about how the industry is trying to hide damage from cell phones. And so we have this sort of perfect storm where right now people are becoming aware more than ever about the risks of cell phones and wireless technology, and at the same time we're the utilities and the government is rolling out one of the largest technology rollouts in history, largely under the radar, and based on wireless technology. It's a very scary time and a very brutal time, I think, in our history, and will be seen like that in the future. And you know, what's sort of enabling this to happen? I thought it was interesting how you mentioned, Gary, that you know, in the 50s and 60s, you had all the doctors and all the people involved smoking cigarettes. Well, now it's a case where practically everyone uses cell phones, and a lot of it is about this psychological tendency of denial. We don't want to think about the risks that we're exposing our children to or ourselves to. We'd rather just pretend it doesn't exist, hope it will go away. And I can't tell you, you know, we send out a bulletin, you know, every couple of months or so, and I can't tell you the number of times when we get an email back saying, please unsubscribe me from your list. And on the bottom it says, you know, sent from my Verizon smartphone, you know, 4G LTE device. And, you know, people don't want to be confronted with it. It's more than just, you know, questioning the technology. It's about an entire worldview that says we can be mobile, we can have streaming audio and video and everything everywhere, and that wireless is the future and its technology is the future, and we're safe and our government is protecting us. And what's happening with, you know, all this evidence and all the accumulating you know, stories about people who are being hurt by this technology is that it's raising really serious questions about these assumptions that wireless is safe, that technology and wireless is good. And I would, you know, I would sort of part with Dr. Carpenter a little bit and say that, you know, wireless is not inevitable. I mean, this could be just a wrong turn on the road, you know, of advancement, and we might in 30, 40 years, we might have, you know, high speeds wired fiber optic communications where we're not always glued to our devices. And I think that would have benefits not only for our health, but also for our psychological well-being and our social lives as well. So, you know, I think that the smart meters are sort of a line in the sand that many people are drawing and saying, you know, we don't want to see what the risks are. We know enough about the short-term health effects that people are reporting by their thousands, and now we don't want to find out the hard way that in 10, 20, 30 years we have an epidemic of leukemia because of these things. And it is just remarkably reckless that they've gone in without, you know, some kind of dialogue between medical professionals and looking at the research. And it's just truly remarkable. I wake up every morning, you know, and surf through the dozens of messages I have from people who are desperate, saying, you know, I can't live with this thing anymore, and I can't sleep. I'm sleeping an hour a night, you know, because of this thing on my house. And, you know, it prompted people in Santa Cruz to actually begin removing their smart meters themselves. Okay, and disobeying their utility.
Joshua, I'd like to segue then at this point into three areas. One, what happens when a person chooses not to have this smart meter, but rather would rather have the old analog meter that is not a problem? Two, have there, to your knowledge, been instances where the people have had the police come to their property in violation of their privacy rights and trespass? And has anything been done to anyone who has challenged the smart meter companies? And lastly, how have they been able to do this and stay out of the mainstream media? The mainstream media, at least up till this broadcast when I was looking, has not been covering this story, and yet this is a situation that could impact at least all those people who have homes or apartments, and the smart meters are rapidly increasing in the numbers being installed. Could you address those, please?
Well, I think your last question is very easily addressed, in that the mainstream media and the corporations who control the mainstream media are basically owned and controlled by the beneficiaries of the smart meter program, the smart grid. They have, you know, plans to not only transmit utility usage data through these smart meters, but also stream broadband, cable, you know, telephone service. There's a tremendous number of these corporations who are invested in the outcome of this. And so, reporting on this, you know, growing grassroots rebellion against the smart meter program does not serve their interests. So I'd say that's, you know, pretty clear at this point. But there has been, you know, extensive coverage in the local and alternative media, and that's been very good. But I could be wrong, but there has not been one single national television news coverage of this issue. It's been absolutely silent, even as a major initiative of the Obama administration really, you know, tanks and becomes has become a huge debacle. So as far as, you know, the rights to not have a smart meter on your house, I think it's very clear, and this was confirmed by a congressperson in Florida, that the smart meter program and the smart grid program is not, in fact, mandatory. It's an opt-in program. But the utilities and the public utilities commissions that are supposed to regulate them around the country have been complicit and just telling people that this is mandatory. And, you know, the risk that we're taking with people's health is one thing, but the brutality that has gone into that, you know, where we've just seen dozens and dozens of reports of especially older and vulnerable people living alone, where the installer will come to their front door and saying, you know, and often cases, you know, in many cases, not even saying we're installing a new meter or a smart meter, just saying there's going to be an interruption in your power. And even when the homeowner says, I don't want this on my house, please, you know, get off my property, often they'll go around the side of their house to see that the smart meter has in fact been installed. There have been installers who've been, you know, hiding in the bushes, waiting for people to leave their homes so they can install, leaping over 6-foot high fences. In cases where the homeowner is repeatedly denying access, you know, the police have been called out. And the smart meter is forcibly installed, which is a real, you know, violation of your private property rights. I mean, no one besides a policeman with a warrant is allowed on your property against your will. That's your just basic private property rights, even a utility. But yet this is going on, and there have been cases where installers have even assaulted residents, you know, trying to protect their homes. So there are various stages in the political process where this is at. In various states. In Maine, their Public Utilities Commission approved an opt-out program where you can keep your analog meter and you're supposed to pay a fee, which, you know, we compare to extortion. You know, why should you need to pay more to protect your health? Why should you need to pay more if you're an electrosensitive person, you know, just because of a medical condition? It's not only immoral, it's illegal. In California, there's been a very heated debate with hundreds and hundreds of people turning out and tearfully reporting their health symptoms. There is an opt-out proceeding right now. There's been no plan agreed upon. But our biggest utility, PG&E, has just announced that it will allow people to retain their analogs, but for a steep fee, $100 initially and $20 a month.
Joshua, we only have 4 minutes left, and I have, this may seem a little out of line with what you're suggesting, but I've been receiving some reports that the smart meter may be able to be adapted to collect data on a person in their home that can be sent over to unknown sources that can be used. Is there any truth in that?
Yeah, you know, people don't realize how detailed data is available. You know, it's basically these smart meters, whether they're wireless or the broadband over power line variety, are enabled to detect which specific appliances you're using and for how long in your home. Each appliance has an electronic signature that can be read by the utility. And so this is extraordinarily valuable information to marketers, you know, because, for example, if you use Gmail, you'll notice that you know, there are ads that will pop up according to what you're writing about in your email. It's slightly disconcerting, and this sort of targeted advertising is really valuable to marketers, because they can save a lot of money on, you know, avoiding wasting sending out their advertising to people who will never buy their product. So if the utilities can know what you're doing in your home, what appliances you're using, they can find out what appliances you'd be more likely to buy and then market directly to you. So there's this whole level of surveillance that can be used by the utility and to make even more money supplied to law enforcement to gather information on potential suspects. And so the privacy and civil liberties element is just up there with the health issue. These meters are really a disaster for you know, all of these things that we hold dear.
The other issue there is, yes, who benefits from this, and that's exclusively the utilities. Mm-hmm. If they install smart meters, they don't have to send someone around to read your analog meter, and so it reduces their costs. The expectation is that ultimately you're going to have different rates of charge for running your clothes dryer at times of high electrical use versus 3 in the morning, and that information will all be available. So it's the utilities only that benefit this. The consumer does not.
Okay, well, we're out of time, and I want to thank you both. Sorry we couldn't take calls on this show. I want to thank you very much, Joshua Hart, for all your good work with the Stop Smart Meters movement. The website is stopsmartmeters.org. And for Dr. David Carpenter, for all the work you've done in the past and continue to do to be one of those scientists, physicians who really care about the public health issues and have not sided automatically with the industry, which is very common, as we know, and we appreciate your independence of thought and your giving us a head up on the dangers of these electromagnetic fields and smart meters in particular.
Thank you, Gary.
My pleasure.
Thank you both. I'm Gary Noll, and this is our continuation of our series on the commentary and progressive commentaries. We thank you all for listening. Please share this information with others. This is the most downloaded program that we're aware of in the United States, the Progressive Commentary Hour. And we thank you all for listening and sharing. Have a nice day.